That's not it. And how do you open? Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. That's better. Just been informed that the department is late, but I suggest that we shouldn't wait for them. Not unless Infraco is dependent on them to report to us. Can I just check with the media? I don't think that we can afford waiting for them, because we actually thought we need 4 hours for this meeting and we are going to end up with only almost two. So I'll hear from members of the committee what their suggestion is. Madam Bowman.
Chairperson, I do think we need to start, but I would like to know why they are late.
They are flying in this morning. You know, I don't know. Probably are trying to save hotel costs coming in the morning, so I don't know. I can't answer for them. Anybody who knows why they are not yet here will tell us. Sir, do you know why they are only flying in this morning? I mean, you two, I don't think you'll be able to answer that one. Maybe we should ask them when they come. Yeah. But you know, sometimes there are delays also. I'm not defending them. I myself waited 4 hours at OR Tambo the other day, coming back from addressing an All Africa SOE conference. So I don't know, we'll ask them when they come. Let's start by introducing ourselves. The members of the committee will introduce themselves first, so that Infraco know who they will be reporting to this today. And then Infraco delegation will be introducing themselves to us. May I just check who is leading the delegation?
I am, Chair. I'm the chairman of Infraco.
Yeah,
OCPA. OCPA Broadband Infraco.
Of the board?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Welcome. Will you try to tell us your name and your delegation? Okay. My name is Sweki Mento, chairperson of this committee. I will move this way. I will take committee members first. Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Dorothea Modile.
She is the whip of the committee. Thanks.
I'm Gloria Bowman, member of the committee, AMC member.
My name is Shiva Pillay. I'm a member of the committee, AMC.
Ibrahim Rasool, alternative member of this committee.
Akwenov, AMC member of this committee.
Victor van Dalen, DA member on this committee.
Marnie van Dijk, member of the Democratic Alliance for the committee.
Looks like we have exhausted members of the committee. We'll take the staff last. Let's take Infraco then. Chairperson of the board of Infraco, over to you and your team.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Andrew Mtembo. I'm the chairman of the board of Broadband Infraco. On my left, I've got Dave Smith, who is the chief executive officer for Broadband Infraco. On my right, I've got Suren Maharaj, who is the chief financial officer of Broadband Infraco. On his right, I've got Fahim Mohammed, who is the company secretary. On his right, we've got Ria Smith, who is the management accountant. And on the far right, we've got Shakira Noor Mohammed, who is the finance manager for Infraco.
Thanks. I don't know if we got all the names. We'll get them again. I myself can't remember. I remember I had a Maharaj. I might be hallucinating. Okay, that's the only name I remember. You are very welcome here. We are very pleased to have you before us. And we are also very pleased that we have the chairperson of the board and the CEO. This is a trend that we would like to maintain. since we were incepted as this committee after elections, it has been very problematic to have chairperson and members of the board appearing before the committee. Apparently, there is a tradition that boards do not come to parliament, a tradition we are questioning, and we say there is always the first time. With this committee, we really want to keep on engaging both the board and management of the SOEs that we are overseeing. You are very welcome here. We are extremely excited to have you here, because this is our first interaction with you. So you will pardon our questions. We'll be flooding with you with questions, even those that you might think are very simplistic. You'll have to bear with us because we are grappling with understanding who you are, what your mandate is, what your operational issues are, and how far you are, as we are also very aware that you are fairly at an embryonic stage of your formation, but we would still like to know where you stand now and your plans for the future, your strengths and even your weaknesses. We will be teasing out, and we invite you to be very free and open with us. Thank you very much. To the members of the committee, I would like to welcome our whip back, Comrade Ramu Dibe, who was on a family matter away from the country for some time. I met her yesterday and she had a very good time. We are very happy to have you back, ma'am. And since you have gone, we have a set of new members in the committee that I think you will take note of. I'm sure you heard their names introducing themselves. And our committee has been fairly beefed up. We are very happy about it. Comrade Rasool, thank you very much for pitching today. We are struggling to have the new members attend. We don't know what the situation, what is causing this perpetual, but we are happy to have you here. Thanks. There are a number of apologies. I would ask our staff members to introduce themselves. Thereafter, we will take apologies. I will start on my left.
Good morning. My name is Tisang Muchume and I'm the committee secretary.
Morning. My name is Eric Boskat. I'm the researcher for the portfolio committee.
We have an intern.
Can you introduce yourself, ma'am?
My name is Abdullah. I'm the intern. Thank you. Do any other staff
member that you are leaving out? No? Okay. Don't you see he looks suspicious? Okay, he better introduces himself if that is the case. Who are you, sir?
Wendell Little Reuters News Agency.
Thanks. We've just been joined by another committee member. We have introduced ourselves, and we will give the space to the committee member to introduce himself too. Sir, over to you. Thank you.
I'm Mutsuburi Mangena, a member of the committee.
I didn't hear you, but I'll say it on your behalf. Mutsuburi Mangena, member of the committee. Mangena.
That's correct.
Comrade Mutsuburi, you have left South Africans to call you Mangena for decades and decades and decades. When I say it, you always protest. Over to you, sir.
Yeah, no, the Nguni ones say Mangena. But I can't excuse the Sotho and Afrikaans-speaking people from calling me Mangena. Because in Afrikaans, as NGE is slangeki.
Kikopatsarelo, thank you very much. We will give you the leeway in Franco to present in the way that you deem fit. We must first sort out the time and agree how much time you need to do the presentation so that we leave healthy time also for ourselves to engage with you. May I know from you roughly how much time you will need? And I'm aware that you have actually two reports. I want to know whether you want to you presenting only one report or I saw a 2007 report, so that one you're not putting before us.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. We think we'll be presenting for 1 hour. 1 hour should be adequate for purposes of giving you the full story. We're only presenting the 2008-2009 report. This is our second annual report, by the way.
Okay. Thank you very much. I would, however, beg your indulgence, because 1 hour is a long, long time. If there are issues that members feel they can't wait in terms of seeking clarity or a bit of engagement until you finish presenting, I'm not encouraging interaction, but I think in between that 1 hour, if members feel very strongly that they need to be clarified, to stop you a little to solicit an answer that should be, I hope that would be acceptable with you.
We're very flexible, Madam Chair, and we'll be happy with that.
Thank you very much. We hand over to you. Thank you.
I thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Sorry, my secretary doesn't remind me that we didn't do apologies.
I apologize, Madam Chair. Can I just record the apology of Ms. Loretta Takobas, who said she won't be able to attend the meeting for today because of the flight delay. And then Mr. Corolla will be joining us late, and Mr. Nana has just arrived. She also notified that he'll be late today. Thanks a lot.
Welcome, Mr. Mlandi. Mlindi, sorry. Where do I take Mlandi from? I don't know about this. I have not yet tested that. Mr. Mlindi is member of the committee representing COPE. I thought it was your senate. Sorry. Nana is your... Okay. Chairperson of the board, over to you. Thank you. There is one more member. I will pause to let her take her seat and introduce herself and welcome them to the committee meeting.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for...
I need the two members to introduce themselves. In fact, I must apologize on behalf of committee members for coming late because our secretary sent two notices with two different times. The first one went out to say the meeting starts at 10, and the second one went out to say the meeting starts at 9:30, and that was very confusing. So members are normally not late like this. That is attributed to those two confusing groups. And others might not even have seen the second notice that said that the meeting is 9:30 and no longer at 10. Comrade Ajay, introduce yourself, please.
I'm Fatima Ajay. I've just been appointed to this committee, and I'm sure we all work well together. Thank you.
We're happy to have you as part of us. Thank you very much. Over to you, sir.
Thanks. Lance Herling from the ID. Actually, my lateness is attributed to my leader holding me back. And I do apologize. But I am here now, and I'm certainly interested in this presentation.
Thanks. You may take over.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Good morning to yourself, and good morning to the members of the committee. Let me kick off by reminding members here that this is our second annual report, and that Infaco is a very young state-owned enterprise. It's an enterprise that started operations in December of 2007, and it has been in operation and existence for exactly 18 months today, as we speak. I did introduce members of my team earlier on, and the way we would like to run this presentation is as follows. Madam Chair, I will kick off and give members here a little bit of background to the establishment of Broadband Infraco, just so we put this entity into context and we understand why it exists and how it came about. And then my CEO is going to go into the objectives of the company. He will also talk to the chairman and CEO's report, as you have them in the annual report. And then he will also talk about the governance report. And then my CFO will then talk about the annual financial statement. And the company secretary may every now and then chip in regarding governance issues. And then we'll close by telling you what our priorities for this financial year being 2009-2010 are, and give you a summary and conclusion. I will close by giving you the summary and conclusion to this presentation. Is that acceptable to members here today?
Yes, we are all here.
Thank you very much. Let me kick off with the background to the establishment of Broadband Infraco. As far back as 2004-2005, the Department of Public Enterprises conducted a study. It was an international survey that was done to look at the whole question of bandwidth availability and affordability in this country and how this country compares to the rest of the world. And the driver behind this was, if you look at a lot of our industries, a number of them could otherwise be doing better had it not been for the high cost of bandwidth in this country. And why 2004, 2005? At the time, there were certain fiber optic assets that were hanging on the power lines of Eskom, as well as on the railway servitudes of Transnet. And government had invested in these assets over a period from about 2002 to 2005. And there had been an intention that had been tabled by the Department of Communications that these assets should be handed over to the second network operator to buy an equity participation by Eskom and Transnet. But before that happened, the Department of Public Enterprises, being the custodian, had to freeze frame, and we had to review the whole process and try and understand whether we were doing the right thing as a government or not. And it became evident from the study that was then conducted that if we were to give these assets over to a second network operator, in effect, what we would be doing as a nation is we'll be creating a duopoly between Telkom and whomsoever that second national network operator would be. And indications from a global perspective have always been that a duopoly will never be in a position to force down the cost of anything. There's always a tendency to collude and keep prices at very much similar levels. And it is for this reason that the Department of Public Enterprises decided that these assets needed to go into a state-owned enterprise that would intervene to try and force the cost of bandwidth down. Now, what were the results of the study? We found that South Africa lags behind its international counterparts in terms of information communication technology penetration. And secondly, that broadband connectivity relative to international benchmarks is low and significantly more expensive. I'm sure you are all aware of where we are today. The cost of making international calls, the cost of accessing information on the internet is exorbitantly high. And the main service provider up until recently when Neotel was introduced was Telkom. So carrying on from that, our investigations also revealed that broadband connectivity providers have a cost structure where a large majority of costs are as follows. In effect, we established that if you look at the cost of making a call between, let's say, South Africa and let's say Europe, for argument's sake, 80% of that cost is for the national long distance, 40%, and the other 40% is for the international leg. So it became evident that for us to influence the cost of connectivity and bandwidth, we had to intervene in the national long distance space as well as the international space. We have had to go back recently this year to look at whether the assumptions we had in forming InfraCo still hold or not. And we looked at the 2009 International Telecommunications Union report titled Measuring the Information Society, the ICT Development Index. And this report confirmed that the findings mentioned above still prevail in the South African environment. So as a result of the above study, the cabinet of the time resolved to retain ownership of the original Eskom and Transnet long-distance telecommunications infrastructure, which was developed between 2002 and 2005. And we, as board and management of InfraCo, were charged with the responsibility of operationalizing these assets and making them available to provide a service. And this happened in 2007. So the current reporting period marks the second year of operations of this company. So let me just summarize by saying that broadband InfraCo business comprises two key elements. The first one is the national long-distance fiber optic network. And my CEO will show you where and how far we have advanced in terms of laying this national long-distance network. And then the second element is the international connectivity project. He will also tell you that recently we've signed up an agreement with 13 other partners to lay a fiber, which is going to be the biggest fiber, the 5.1 terabits per second, between South Africa, Cape Town to be exact, and the United Kingdom. 13,000 kilometers of fiber. It's probably the biggest in terms of capacity and the longest in the world by the time it comes ready for service in 2011. So, broadband Infraco, for those of you that may not be aware, was established by way of an Act of Parliament. And this was the Broadband Infraco Act 33 of 2007, which stipulated very clearly what the mandate would be, and that mandate would include the development of the necessary long-distance telecommunications network infrastructure, inclusive of international component, to increase access to broadband connectivity services in the South African market. So you will note that our focus, our mandate, is firstly to improve the access, secondly to make sure that that access is affordable to the bigger South African community, and thirdly, to make sure that that access is open, it's non-discriminatory. So that's the mandate that were given by Parliament in that Act 33 of 2007. So I mean, let me just stop there, Madam Chair. How do we do this? We do that by ensuring that we're doing it within a framework of good corporate governance and international best practice. From the onset, we have adopted a principle that says, much as we have this almost socialistic responsibility in terms of our mandate, we will make sure that in the very, very short term, Infraco sustains itself. It doesn't have to come back to the fiscus to be asking for money, as you currently have with a lot of the state-owned enterprises. Not always. It doesn't. Please note, after in the short term, short to medium term. Obviously, you know, this is an embryonic stage in the life of the organization, and one would expect that, you know, naturally to kickstart, we will have had to rely on the fiscus, and we may very well rely on the fiscus for the next maybe couple of years. But our aim is to make sure that while delivering on our mandate, we are able to self-sustain so that the reliance on the fiscus is as minimal as possible. Madam Chair, let me hand over. If there are no questions to my introduction, I would like to hand over to the CEO to take us through some of the other elements.
Which submarine is laying this infrastructure?
Sorry, Madam Chair. Let me explain how it's structured. There are 14 parties that have come together and they've created a consortium of sorts. They've entered into an agreement that governs how they're going to work together. They have then appointed a service provider, being Alcatel-Lucent, to go and manufacture this fiber optic network and to lay it on our behalf from Cape Town to the UK. As I understand it, they are currently doing the survey of the route in the undersea on the ocean floor, where this cable is going to be laid, and they will be starting the manufacturing of this 13,000 kilometer cable in December in their factory. Their factory is in Calais in France, and then they have ships that will have this cable rolled inside the ship with a plow at the back of the ship. David has got a picture, which will then go from, the one ship will go from Cape Town, the other one will go from the UK, will lay this cable on the seabed, bury it with the 14 landings that we'll have across Africa, and then bring it back so that we have a continuous cable. So it's not laid by a submarine, Madam Chair. It's a submarine cable in the sense that it is undersea.
Let me just check with other members if they have questions before we proceed. Yes, Mr. Kurno.
The Act came into operation, the 2007 Act, late in 2008, or when did the Act become operational?
The Act was Act 33 of 2007. It came into effect on the 8th of So 1st of February, it came into effect. It was promulgated on the 8th of January.
So we 18 months down the line of this new act.
In terms of operations, we actually started operations as we're going through the process of the incorporation.
We are legislators. So after 18 months, are you satisfied that you're on track according to the mandate spelled out in the act for broadband InfraCo? And do you foresee any weaknesses or possible amendments to the act in a short period after since it came into operation while we're dealing with the act?
I wonder if it's not to anybody unless
I'm mentioning. Yeah, I would venture to answer the question. In terms of the mandate, we believe that we are on track. In terms of the act, in terms of legally and regulatorily, what needs to happen to InfraCo today, we believe we are on track. The only thing that is outstanding now, and for some reason, you know, has been delayed is the licensing of InfraCo. The licensing of InfraCo, and Dave will speak to that, has been delayed tremendously. As you can see, the act came into effect the 1st of February 2008. We did not get the directive, the policy directive from the Department of Communication starting the process of licensing of InfraCo until February of 2009, this year. And it is only in March that the process of licensing of InfraCo started. And as we speak, as we sit here today, we're still not licensed, and we are advised that the process should proceed in earnest, and we should be licensed by the end of September.
No, that's a separate issue. So I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Let's wait until we come to that licensing issue, and we can discuss it.
Yes, Madam Chair, something that is of particular interest to me is we are laying the cable on the west coast, and on the east coast there's also a cable that is going on that has been commissioned already and working. So I just wanted to know, why didn't we partner with those people, and are we laying an own cable on this side? Why is it necessary to have all that cost for two cables to go around Africa? And you said this is the longest one. Isn't that one a little longer to go around that side? Is it shorter route? Okay.
Let's take all three questions or four and then give you a chance to. I saw two more hands. Comrade Ajay first, and then yourself, sir.
I'm just intrigued by the fact here that Neotel is the only organization working with InfraCo at this stage. What is the significance of that, and what is what is actually happening to other providers like Telkom, for instance? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's been reported on slide 6, the objectives of the broadband InfraCo. And there are four objectives. But I would just like to know, are there any time frames specific slot into this different objectives? You know, when will we come closer to the realization of these objectives? Because if it's just connected to we need to do this and we need to do that, to ensure this and to ensure that, it says nothing. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on those four objectives, which is actually your constitution, if I can say that, whether there are time frames specifically connected to this. So every year when you come back to us, that we can hold you accountable on what you said, then, because we take minutes, we've got the reports on all of this, and we need to have some sort of a control on reaching these targets. Thank you, Chair.
If I may ask one last question. The intellectual property, is it tightly and firmly ours, despite the 14 consortia arrangement, and nobody can lay claim to it today, tomorrow?
Those are the questions that we need to answer. Can you take your mic,
please? Madam.
Madam Chair, the way we're going to approach this is I will give a first step to answering the question, and if my CEO feels I've left out anything, he will come in. Let me start off with the laying of the Western cable versus the Eastern cable. I want to place on the table that the Eastern cable, and I'm sure you're talking specifically about SECOM. That is a cable that was founded by private equity players. And as we well know, private equity players, their mandate is very simple. We invest money and we expect a return. And it would be folly for anybody to believe that being private equity participants, they would be committed to forcing the cost of bandwidth down to the levels that we are expecting to push the cost of bandwidth down compared to other regimes globally. At the time, they had no wish, and I can assure you that we did engage them. They had no wish whatsoever to engage parties like government or state-owned enterprises that would be looking to further push down the cost of bandwidth, primarily because they were expecting certain internal rates of return, which are far more superior than the internal rate of return that we're operating from. So that's the first reason. The second reason was that if you look at East Africa and you look at West Africa, really the success of international connectivity bows on three things. Number one, it's the capacity. Number two, it's the cost. And number three, it is the ability to provide redundancy in case you've got one link down, and the ability to collect traffic from the mainland to take it across to other countries. Now, the SECOM cable, as you will note, you know, by looking at the map of Africa, it lands at Mtunzini, and then it touches on Kenya, and then it touches Mozambique, touches on Tanzania, it touches Kenya, and then it goes to Somalia, etc., etc. You would need a robust Pan-African infrastructure to actually be able to connect all African countries to that network. If you look at our cable, and Dave will show you a map later on, it actually starts from Cape Town and it touches almost every country on the west coast of Africa. And the hope is that most of these countries will then be able to develop their national long-distance infrastructure like we have done in South Africa to collect the hinterland traffic onto this cable. And as such, you will find that the critical mass on our cable is much more than you would find on the East Coast. And not only that, we venture to say that we'll be providing redundancy for the East Coast cable. So, to answer your question, effectively there is a necessity because of the countries in West Africa that are not otherwise serviced by the SECOM cable on the East Coast of Africa. I don't know if that answers your first question. Okay. The second question was, why do we have Neotel as the only customer? Okay. I mentioned earlier on that in terms of our mandate, we are required to provide cost-effectively provide accessible broadband to the bigger communities of South Africa. Now, unfortunately, in terms of the current Electronic Communications Act, up until such time that we are licensed, we are not able to provide this service on an open access basis to the bigger communities of South Africa, including in particular the operators. So we had to start operations, and in starting operations, the arrangement that we currently have with Neotel is that we could not hold them back because, remember, these assets were supposed to go into Neotel, and we held them back. So we could not hold them back rolling out their services only because government has changed direction. So it became evident and clear that even as we are waiting for our license, it's important that we enable them to start with the service. And the arrangement that we have is one of almost a subcontractor to them. They have the license. We are providing them with the infrastructure to start their services. When we are licensed and we are able to get
whatever license, the ECNS license and the ECS license, we will then be able to have the likes of the Vodacoms, even the Telcoms, the MTNs, the Celsius, Neotels, all the licensed operators as being our customers. But prior to licensing, we're not able to do that. We've been very anxious to get our license, but, you know, it's been totally out of our hands that this process has taken this long. That's the second question. The third question was going back to my slide 6, talking about the objectives and time frames around these objectives. I will take them one by one. It says the development of the necessary long-distance telecommunications network infrastructure, inclusive of the international component, to increase access to broadband connectivity services in the South African market. Let me put this into context for you. When we started in 2004, 2005, in fact, 2007, the extent of the network, which is the fiber on the ESCOM and Transnet servitude, was just under 6,000 kilometers. We have rolled out more than double that number in terms of kilometers of fiber optic network in the last.
Did you respond to the issue of intellectual property rights?
That's the last question, sir.
Did you?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
I'm coming to that. It's number 4 on my
list. Okay.
So we started with 6,000. In 18 months, we've rolled out to close on 13,000 kilometers of national long-distance fiber. Now, that 13,000 kilometers, let's put it into context. We have a point of presence that is close, that is a handshake with the following countries: Namibia, Botswana, we cut across Lesotho, Swaziland will have a handshake there, Mozambique, as well as Zimbabwe. None of this infrastructure was existent when we started. And what has driven our expansion has been the requirements and the needs of our one customer being Neotel for the time being. So I can't give you a time frame and say we'll have so many kilometers by year 5. It is going to be very much driven by, firstly, customer needs, and secondly, by government directives, in terms of which we are required to go to certain communities that other operators are otherwise not willing to go to for us to provide a service. But I'm just demonstrating to you that in the last 18 months, we've rolled out close on about 7,000 kilometers of additional fiber on the power lines and the railway services. The second bullet is providing access to telecommunications connectivity services that's significantly lower when compared to available market rates for the equivalent capacity available in the market today, but sustainable price. We, our shareholders, have set us a mandate in terms of an internal rate of return that we should be working to, and that is a utility internal rate of return comparable to the same internal rate of return that the likes of ESCOM are operating on. Now, that being the basis for building our business plans, you will see when we get our license, where we are required to publish our tariffs for national long distance and international, you will see that our pricing is going to be significantly lower than what you currently have in the marketplace today. I can't give you the exact numbers because obviously a lot will depend on the time at which you get licensed and, you know, exactly what our marketing strategy is at that point. But I can assure you, if we're to get the license like today, we are quite confident that within a period of about 2 months we should, and we're required by the Act to go out with our tariffs, and they will be for public consumption. They have to be tabled publicly. The third bullet is providing the enabling mechanism for the Department of Science and Technology projects of national importance from a telecommunications perspective. Where we are today is we're in the process of writing to the Department of Science and Technology, asking them to contextualize their requirements over the next 5 to 10 years in terms of broadband capacity requirements, with the projects that they currently have on the table. Those projects being your SANRAMs, the South African National Research Network, your FKA, Square Kilometer Array Telescope, etc., etc. So,
as we speak today, we are putting on the table a letter to them, asking them to contextualize it so we know exactly how much capacity they need and how we then plan around that. And then the last question was, achieving the above strategic goals within a framework of good corporate governance and international best practice. Well, this is not something in the future. It's already happening now. You will see from our audit report that we had no qualifications, were compliant with King II, were compliant with PSMA, were compliant with the Companies Act. We've got a risk profile on the table that we monitor on a regular basis. We've got a fraud a program that we have on the table that we monitor. So this for us is primary to the way we conduct our business. And from day one, when we set up this company, we made a commitment that we will abide by this. And then the last question, Chair, is intellectual property of work. The way it's structured, Chair, that intellectual property for, I guess the question is specifically with regard to the marine cable, because there are other parties that play in there. We have rules that have been defined in the construction and management agreement in terms of how we will relate to each other as the founding partners around all manners of issues, IP included. We naturally cannot have IP belonging to us because we're only a 12% participant in this cable. And the way it was structured is that here is the cable. It will cost close on $670 million. You take 12% equity participation in this cable. You are entitled to 12% of the capacity of this cable. However, in terms of how we manage the cable, it's going to be a joint effort. How we land the cable in the countries where we land it, it's a joint effort. And the management of the selling of the capacity is a joint effort. However, I must mention very quickly that this joint management does not necessarily mean that we have to issue one price at the landing station. Each party is free to go out with whatever pricing they so wish to go out with at the landing station. In other words, at the landing station, each and every one of us will have a point of presence, and then we'll clip onto that point of presence our individual, our respective customers, and charge them whatever it is that we want to charge them at that point of presence. So the intellectual property is a joint ownership issue here, Madam Chair.
There is one technical term that I need you to clarify. The issue of the handshakes. Don't assume that we are very sophisticated. That's the first thing. But I think next time or after you have left here, you should send us these rules of construction and management agreements. Not if they are not in your report. And if we own 12%, who else owns what? What percentage? And I hope that we're not owning 12% and yet being the most people contributing in terms of the fiscal. So it doesn't help us much to say we own 12%. Who are the other owners and what percentages do they own? Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll start with the handshakes. What the handshakes are, yeah, there's another terminology, and I don't know if it's more complicated than handshakes, Madam Chair. Our mandate is to bring the national long distance and international capacity into the peripheries of the metro areas. And how do we do that? There's what we call a point of presence. In other words, we bring the cable to a certain point, and then we bring the terminal equipment to enable people to clip onto our network or access our network. The handshake that I'm talking about is with the borders with each and every one of the countries that I mentioned earlier on, we have established points of presence in exactly the manner as I'm defining now. And so if the other countries should want to have a connection with us, they will come to that point of presence and they will bring in their national long-distance connectivity to that presence so that readily there's a stream of communication between the two countries. Rather. I don't know if that explains it. the construction and management agreement, I think my CEO, sure, he'll be more than happy to do a synopsis. It's a very thick document, 272 pages. We can certainly do a summary that basically spells out what the cost is, our participation, who the other parties are, where the landing stations are, what high level, what the rules are. I'm sure we should be able to do that. Yeah. Thank you.
So you signed the agreement on the
Yes, it was signed on the, in fact, all the parties signed on the 8th of April, was it? Yes, it was 8th of April. Both with all the other players, as well as the supply agreement. They were all consummated on the 8th of April. So we're actually in implementation phase now, Madam Chair. With that, Madam Chair, I will hand over to my CEO to take the committee to the next slide.
Chairperson, thank you. Chair, we're also very proud to show our new corporate colours here today. And we're very happy to be able to do that on Spring Day in Cape Town. Wonderful day to show our green colours. Chair, the questions have taken us quite a bit ahead in the presentation on a number of slides. So on those slides where we've already addressed matters, I will try to move forward very rapidly, if that was just the committee. Chair, really, just to reinforce what the chairperson has said, the focus of the company during this reporting period was specifically on consolidating the very rapid expansion that took place prior to the launch in December of 2007, as well as then developing the international connectivity part of our mandate in line with the original strategy to develop broadband InfraCo in two parts, to first establish a national part and then to move on to the international part. And in terms of the international connectivity, we've already reported that we signed in April, but as at the financial year end, the processes had been concluded to finalize the commercial terms for the parties to engage. And Chair, on a future slide, we will show who is involved in the cable. And we also concluded the procurement process for the selection of the supplier of the system. The Chairman has already mentioned a number of the milestones in the licensing process for Broadband InfraCo, but just to outline some of the most important dates. The Broadband InfraCo Act was promulgated on the 1st of February 2008. The Electronic Communications Act amendments, which provided for the licensing of Broadband InfraCo, was promulgated on the day thereafter. The amendment to that act required the Minister to issue a policy guideline to ICASA to request them to consider applications for our licenses. That policy guideline was issued early this year. ICASA immediately proceeded with the invitation to apply in March, and we submitted our license applications in April. Chair, since the financial year end, our license applications have been published. We have engaged with ICASA and other interested parties during the public hearings process, and immediately thereafter we commenced with negotiations with the regulator to finalize the terms and conditions of our license. And I believe we can report, Chair, that we concluded the negotiation process with ICASA on the 3rd of August, and the ICASA Council must now consider the recommendations from the ICASA Licensing Committee. And we believe, Chair, that this process can still be concluded in the month of September. In terms of the market, we've already discussed the matters around the single engagement with Neotel. In the post-licensing phase, Chair, the Chairman has already mentioned the fact that open access is required, the fact that our tariffs will be filed with ICASA and will be in the public domain. And we believe thereafter, Chairperson, we will follow what is essentially a wholesale carrier market approach to enable other licensed operators to connect to our network for long distance connectivity and for international connectivity. That is both operators that are licensed with network and service licenses. We will also be able to connect very large enterprise and corporate customers who may want direct access to the network. And so we will also focus on connecting operators. As we know, through the conversion process, many operators were licensed up to 300. And many of these operators may focus in areas that were previously underserviced. And Broadband InfraCo's strategy will be able to enable these operators by giving them backhaul connectivity from these remote areas, the Chairperson. As part of the license terms and conditions, we have committed to ICASA to provide access to our network through the areas that have been identified by the DOC and ICASA as previously underserviced. And that will be a term and condition of the license. So we've already reported the expansion of the network. I think the most important is obviously not only the increase in the footprint of the Broadband InfraCo network through the previous financial year, but also the increase of its capacity by in excess of 30%. So we've increased the transmission capacity of our infrastructure by more than a third during this financial year. We continue to work on the availability and reliability of the network because other service operators require very high quality service from us. So we continue to work to improve that. And we've already increased the number of our sites, Chair, to in excess of 130 with the nearly 12,000 kilometers of network out there. This is a geographical representation of our network, and we've already reported on the expansion, and we also show the connections, Chair, there to the neighbouring countries. The network has also been designed to be able to connect to the international cables. Reference was made to the cable being developed on the East Coast, landing at Umthunzini over here. Our network has been designed to be able to connect that cable to South Africa, and our network has also been designed to be very close to the landing of the international cable at Azefontein, just north of South Africa, of Cape Town. And so the Broadband InfraCo national network is very well positioned to be able to move traffic from the East Coast to the West Coast and vice versa in the absence of a subsea connection around the southern tip of the continent. In terms of the operations and maintenance of the network, I think it's known that in the pre-licensing phase, one is not able to, in fact, operate the infrastructure without the license. And so the operations of our infrastructure has been outsourced to Neotel as well as to the original equipment manufacturer. So they've also provided critical skills for the operations of this network before we licensed. And Eskom and Transnet have also provided services for the maintenance of fiber along the railway lines and along the power lines. Clearly, this is a dangerous environment, and people with the necessary skills have to be able to do that. We've mentioned that it's very important for us to improve the reliability of the network, and we will continue to do that. So on the WAC side, I'm not the West African cable system. after the
maintenance,
how frequent is that person is done every day.
Okay.
If it's a 24/7, 24 hours operation. If an element on the network breaks, field technician is sent to the site to do repairs, and maintenance on a regular basis is done for all the supplementary equipment that keeps the network running. Very regular activity. Chair, moving on to the West African cable system. You did ask the question, Chair, around who's involved in this cable. All the large South African operators are involved. Telkom, MTN, Vodacom, Neotel via their Tata Communications shareholding, Namibia Telecom, Angola, investors from the DRC, from Nigeria, Ghana, Togo, the Canary Islands, and Portugal. So there are numerous investors. The exact percentage investment, we'll declare those numbers when we give the detailed report on that. The chairperson is effectively, there are four parties who have invested at the top level. The largest investment part being the 12% that our chairperson reported, and those four parties are ourselves, MTN, Cable and Wireless, and Angola Telecom. So the 12% stake, Chair, although it seems small, it's the largest investment portion that you can make as a single investor.
By when will you get the percentage? A day, two, after your
place? Yes, Chair, we can circulate that information to the secretariat of the committee.
Okay.
Chair, Broadband Infraco's investment in this cable will be funded through a combination of debt and equity, and we believe this equity has already been provided for in the MTF cycle that's currently underway. Chair, we're also happy to report that specifically from the board and our shareholder that the economic principles of our participation in the cable are such that we will be able to achieve our mandate as stipulated in the Broadband Infraco Act of 2007. The cable, it's reported here that the cable is a 3.8 terabit system, which is a very, very large capacity cable. That capacity has since the financial year end has been increased to 5.1, so it's even larger. And that goes with the inclusion of additional optical capability within the cable. The cable is also expected to be ready for service in the second half of 2011. And, Chair, this cable is, when it's reached its full design capacity, Chairperson, is an order of magnitude larger than the capacity that's currently available to South Africa on the West Coast. As well as the combined capacity to South Africa after the CECOM cable has been constructed. So this, we believe this cable can take this country very far into the future.
No, I just wanted to see, I mean, you said it's ready for service in mid-year 2011. Is it not a problem in terms of the World Cup next year? And was this not one of the reasons to fund Infraco up front, was to try and get it ready for the World Cup, or have we got enough broadband capacity for the World Cup next year?
Chair, the international capacity requirements for the World Cup have been provisioned through the upgrade to the existing SAT-3 cable. So the delay in the completion of this cable is not a constraint in terms of 2010. Chair, this is a depiction of the cable and where it lands on all the various countries up the west coast. And as our chairperson was pointing out, if one sees this cable together with the new cable that's been developed on the east coast, then with the closure of national links across some of these countries, east and west can be very well connected, and the continent can be well connected from a telecommunications perspective going forward. And we currently experience a situation where if you phone in the DRC, for example, that this call gets routed via London all the way back, these cables will certainly eliminate the need for Africa to be so unconnected. So on the empowerment side, we've touched on some of the governance issues, but obviously as a state-owned enterprise, we've implemented the necessary requirements to comply with the BBBEE codes, and the outcome of that was that 70% of our procurement during the previous financial year was procured from suppliers registered in terms of the code. And on the human capital side, for the first part of the year, we did still insource a certain level of resources from Eskom Enterprises. The company has now made permanent appointments to its own staff. There's no more secondment of staff from Eskom. The staff numbers as of today are now up to 55, so we continue to recruit, and we will continue to recruit through the financial year end to increase those numbers up to approximately 150 people to sustain our operations. We're also happy to report, Chair, that we did reasonably well in terms of racial equity, employment equity, and gender equity, and we've achieved 73% and 43% respectively in terms of racial equity and gender equity for the year.
There's another question. Thank you, Chair. I think for us to assist there, it would be very helpful to disaggregate and give us the real figures in terms of race and gender.
Chair, we do report in terms of the employment equity guidelines, and we will be happy to make that information available together with the RACS, the West African Cable System report.
Yeah, but before you proceed, in addition to that, we're planning to visit sites. How are we going to visit this one? It's either you make it possible for us to see what this is all about. Is it possible for you to simulate it for us? I must tell you that I've met Newtel because they want to buy you out or to buy you, I don't know. But their pictures and were three-dimensional and very explanatory. After meeting them, I had an understanding of what you are talking about. I think with this kind of presentation, this is still Greek. So you'll have to go and look for ways of, because we can't visit your site effectively and see for ourselves under the sea what is happening there or whatever. You will have to kind of simulate or do better picture arrangement in your presentation to assist us to figure out what you're talking about.
Chair, this is a very difficult operation to demonstrate, and I'm not just saying this in jest, because we are a world sailor. Effectively what we have is, when you look at the power line, this 12-13,000 kilometers that I'm talking about is hanging side by side the power line that you see on most of the Western, the pylons that you see around the country. If you come to our establishment, what you probably see is just, you know, a terminal room where most of these things terminate for us to be able to then distribute this. Now, you know, I think perhaps what would be useful is, I mean, we can show you all sorts of pictures, but what would be useful is for you to actually come and have the opportunity of seeing our operations, where we are, what we actually do, and then, you know, we can also expose you to some of the fiber optic cables, you know, how it hangs on the power lines, where we have it on the railway lines, and this is quite a trip that we'd have to take you on, Madam Chair. We'd have to put together a program for you, Madam Chair. I don't want to commit here. I mean, a lot depends on the Western one, on the CEO. But yes, we can do that. And just to show you what we're talking about physically. And I think there's, you know, there's a lot to be said for that, because the pictures won't tell you much. You have to actually physically see what we're talking about.
Yes, no, that's acceptable. We'll want you to put that program for us, where we'll go and see the amount that we can see. But I know technology is also very advanced. You can see inside a human being. You can see when they look for black boxes under the sea, they do show pictures of those. So I'm sure with technology, with the move of time, you'll also be able to demonstrate, in addition to the visits that we'll undertake, to go and see the little bit that we'll be able to see. Thanks.
Sorry, Chair. The unfortunate part is with the marine cable. Mm-hmm. At this point in time, there is nothing to see. What is happening is they're still surveying the seabed to see where this cable is going to lay. You can only start seeing things beginning of next year, and the things that you would be able to see is at the factory in France, unfortunately, where they're actually manufacturing this cable. But come, I think, December next year, when they start laying the cable, I think it's another opportunity where we can actually take you to the ships as they get ready to lay the cable, so you can actually see the physical process of how they do this. May I suggest, Madam Chair, that perhaps the first trip to see what we have on the national long distance side is set up once we're licensed, when we're able to make noise, because now we have the license in hand, and we'll program the Western that trip for after we are licensed. That's the first leg of.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a lot of questions, but I'm going to wait till the presentation ends, because most of, maybe my, like as I said, some of my questions get answered in the presentation, so it's no point asking the questions in advance and preempting. But I think what the chairperson is trying to say is that when you talk to lay persons and you tell them there's InfraCo, there is broadband, and you are a connectivity company providing connectivity to telecommunications and to broadband networks, many lay persons, they don't see what is the need for it, what is it, and exactly what it is. So probably what I think the chairperson is looking for is in the introduction to say, this is the form of communication that we have now. This is the rate it communicates at. If we introduce this, this is what the communication will come to. This is what the costings of these are. This is what the costings of these are. This is why we ventured into this. So you give certain background, not necessarily to conceal a fiber optic cable necessarily, but just to show what the fiber optic cable can do and what it is doing for us. I think some visual graphics of that in terms of what you could do. And I'm saying it's maybe it is something that you could probably do in a presentation, even a DVD or something, and send back to us, and we'll give a visual presentation of what it is. See, these days now it becomes very easy. You just watch DVDs and you can watch everything. And so I think just a visual simulation of understanding what that is. Because suddenly if you're just speaking to laypersons, I know what it is. But you know, if you're just speaking to somebody who does not know what this is, and you're just sitting in a portfolio committee and you're saying you're dealing with cabling and bandwidth, it's not something that is understood easily. I think that is what happens.
Chairperson, I think Mr. Smith has come to the end of his presentation on the chairperson and the chief executive officer's report. So I want to ask a question now about the report, if he's finished.
No, let's hear from
him. Are you finished, as he says?
So we've concluded the CEO and chairman's report. We will now move on to the government section and then the financial.
I get a feeling members want to engage the chairman and the CEO before we proceed to the others, and that's okay with me.
I'm going to refer to the annual report. Thank you for a good presentation or summary of your chairman's and executive officer's report. First of all, let's unpack, I think, here the licensing issues. This has been being delayed now for a long time. In your annual report, I think it's on page 10, you said the year ahead, the finalization and terms and conditions of these licenses has now been delayed until the end of August 2009. That was yesterday, the 31st of August. Now today is spring, so it's the 1st of September. Then you say you may finalize it in September. Can you inform this committee how did it come to this extensive delay? Who delayed this? Is it due to what you say, ministerial policy directions? Is it due to ICASA that did not provide a timely invitation to apply? Is it with the ICASA Council? Is it with yourselves? Is it with... Where do we find this delay? Can you inform the committee? What led to this statement of affairs? Because I asked the chairperson and he said, right, this is the only outstanding major issue from the act that you that were promulgated in February last year. That's my first question. And I'm not going to go to where you discuss it extensively, but you explain the process. And we're talking two licenses. We're talking ECNS and an ECS. So I want, that's the first question. On page 8 of your report, you refer to your 3-year business plan. Chairperson, is it possible that Infraco can supply us with the business plan so that we can look at your business plan for the next 3 years, and when you come in to appear before us, that we at least we have a sense of to monitor, to oversee your business plan. Because your business plan, I would assume it's a strategic business plan, must talk to your annual report and must talk to your budget. And this is the primary function of this committee, to see how do you link the three, your strategic business plan, your annual report post the event, and report on your annual report what you set out to do in your business plan, and how do you link it to your budget. So I think we need a copy of your business plan, strategic plan. That's my second question. My third question, on page 8, you also talk about your to fund your network capital expenditure. And you only refer here, you've invested in market-linked investments in 3 different financial institutions. Can you inform this committee how and where did you invest in this global financial crisis that the world has seen? Did it do well for you? Did something go wrong there in your investments? Because I see your earned interest was 55.3 million during the year, which I assume you invested probably in a money market. I'm not sure. I'm asking you, how did you invest in the 3 investment companies? That's my question. And my
can I ask you to hold the first one? You come back.
My last one, it's on 11. The CEO says, and the chairperson, on page 11, the current financial year will be a watershed year for infrastructure. Is it to do with your licensing obtaining or not? Is it to do with your infrastructure rollout network nationally or internationally? Can you just unpack that sentence for us? Why do you say this current year, 2009-2010, is the watershed year for infrastructure? For us to understand and to hold your hands and join with you to say where are the problematic areas that you may foresee when we can assist. Thank you for allowing me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Just to follow up on the issue of the delay in the licensing,
I think that in addition to wanting to get to the nub of why the delay, I'm a little bit worried about the effect of the delay, because your relationship with Neotel is not simply that Neotel is your client. Neotel is also the entity that holds your license under which you seem to be doing some operations using their license. Now, at the time in 2011, hopefully, when all of these things come together, would that relationship have given Neotel an inside track to the work that then moves out in moving beyond your mandate, because your mandate is international connectivity and national long distance. There is a massive scope of work and opportunity mm-hmm. that comes from moving off the national grid into all the areas, particularly of the country. Would you have not put Neotel in a pole position in relation to other potential competitors? And so for me, the impact of the delay is a very important one, because there's a free flow, I think, at this point of information, of technologies and all of those kind of things between broadband, InfraCo, and an entity like Neotel. So it's really just whether we are not setting up an unhealthy situation in your relationship with Neotel, and is it at the expense of other actual and potential competitors when you are fully on stream?
I saw him. I'm going to put all of them in this order. Mr. Nana, yourself, sir, and Mrs. Rambudile, Dr. Smith, and Dr. Mayena. Five in that order, please. And Mrs. Bowman is actually the first one, and then that's this.
Sorry, Chair. There's been a lot of questions that have been put forward. I'd like to request that perhaps we address them before we move on to the next wave of questions.
That's fine.
Chair, I've noted all the questions.
I may not answer them in the order that they were asked. I'll try and answer the easy ones first. In packing the word watershed, we mean exactly that this is the year that we expect the organization to be licensed. We expect it to be the year that open access is provided to our infrastructure, and hence Neotel does not have continued with an exclusive arrangement that they currently have. And that we are then able to provide service to many of the other licensed operators and large enterprise customers out there when they connect to our network. This will also diversify our revenue stream and make us a more robust and sustainable company going forward with more than one customer. Chair, that's what we mean by a watershed year.
Perhaps another point to make here, Chair, is that I would like the committee to understand that the current arrangement with Neotel was not, from the onset, was not the preferred route. But one must accept that at the time there was a moral obligation, as well as, I think, a potential legal obligation on the part of government to do something to enable Neotel to at least start operations, because very early, I think as far back as about 2002, there had been a promise made to Neotel that they would have access and ownership of this infrastructure. And when government changed tack and decided that a state-owned enterprise was to be formed to do exactly what Broadband Infraco was doing, there was a negation in terms of promises that had been made to Neotel. So much as this is not a commercially acceptable arrangement, it had to be done in order to avoid a spat between Neotel and government. So one would have hoped that, you know, we would get out of
this arrangement as quickly as possible to allow the leveling of the playing field so that other operators have got access to the InfraCo infrastructure. I thought perhaps it would be useful for me to just to put that into context.
Chair, but just to add to that, we're very encouraged that Neotel want to buy us. Because I think it's an indication of the value of broadband Africa. Chair, on the issue of the 3-year business plan and the process, I'm not trying to avoid the question, Chair, but I just have to tread carefully in terms of protocol. We provide 3-year corporate plans to the shareholder, to DPE, for approval by the minister, and I believe that the correct channel would probably be from the shareholder through to this committee. Can I leave it there?
No. I think in any state entity, I think we need a strategic business plan from infrastructure broadband.
So we do have one, and what I'm reporting on is that we've put it forward to the Minister of Public Enterprises for approval, and I believe that once approved by the Minister of Public Enterprises, it will be the correct time to forward it to this committee.
That is not acceptable to us, sir. Not how it's done. It's not how it is done. We want that business plan. We want it within, before the end of this, not unless you say it's not ready. If it is not ready, you will send a copy to the minister and send a copy to us. Dr. Pillay, is it on this issue? Okay.
I don't want to come to the defense, but what should be happening here is that the ministry should be present with you here. I understand the issue of corporate governance because I sit on many boards. You are responsible and accountable to your shareholder, and your shareholder is actually the government, not the portfolio committee. What should be happening is that you should be sitting here with the minister, and we should be asking the minister for this report. If you are saying that there is a report that is given and the report is with the minister, I think our route is then is to say when the ministry comes in here, we must defer this question to ask, are they going to give us that report? I don't know, ma'am, because you're sitting on the outside, whether you are a spectator, person from the press. If you are here in the meeting, then we can consider it.
Chair, I thank you very much, Doctor, for that, for coming to our rescue. I think the CEO was struggling with that. You know, in effect, he's not struggling with making the report available to the committee. He's struggling with the protocol. We've got, you know, as a chairperson of the board, I report to the minister, and if there is any information to be made available to any forum, you know, I would have to go back to the minister and say, you know, the portfolio committee has asked for this report. It's with you. You do as you please with it, so that I don't get into trouble on my from a governance, strictly from a governance perspective.
Are you from the minister?
Yes.
Why were you late?
I apologize for being late because our flight was delayed. So that's the reason we're late, and also coming into Parliament, there was some traffic. So for that, we apologize. In terms of the corporate plan, Broadband Infraco did submit the corporate plan to the department. We've analyzed and evaluated the corporate plan, and we submitted internally to the minister to approve it. So once that has been approved, we're quite comfortable to forward it to the portfolio committee to review and evaluate on the back of that. So that we'll make available as soon as it's been finalized.
No, it's okay. We'll take it this up with the minister. But do you have an indication of the time, likely?
Can I commit that before the end of this month it will be submitted to the portfolio committee? It will be validated by the department, and we've done our own assessment, and it should have been approved by the minister.
Can I just ask the department, this business plan, is it going to be tabled in Parliament?
Chairperson, just
to defend you actually what you said last week that people should be on time. I just want to make a comment on what's just been said for the excuses of delays, and you made a very strong input last week, Chairperson, that this should not happen again. Me and Dr. Kornoff came in by BA this morning from Johannesburg at 6 o'clock. My colleagues flying SAA came in on the 6 o'clock flight. We're all here in time for our meetings. So if we can stand up 3:30 in the morning heading for the airport, I think members of the department can do so as well. Take the earliest flight and not the latest flight to their convenience. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. We are not happy with that. You can hear from that. We hope it will not happen again. If you think you'll be delayed in the morning, you must take a flight the day before. But anyway, I think late September will be too late. Because something wrong happened here. Your annual report should have been given to the minister together. Those approvals should have happened before this meeting. So we will write to the minister to ask for that business plan urgently. And the end of September is way too far. We will request that within the next 10 days. You sort that out with the minister. We'll write also to the minister and we'll request that to the in the next 10 working days. Okay. You are still answering some other outstanding questions, CEO.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, there was a question around the investment portfolio and the three institutions with which we've invested. That was based on a diversification strategy approved by the board for the investment of the additional funds in the money market with money market linked rate, and it was done on a pure commercial evaluation by the selection of the three financial institutions. So in terms of the licensing process, I think without the licensing process,
so in terms of the licensing process, there's never been any dispute around the need for Broadband InfraCo to have electronic communications network license, ECNS. However, during the public hearings, a number of other operators, most notably some who have recently received their own licenses through the conversion process, made submissions to ICASA that Broadband InfraCo should not be granted an ECS license, Electronic Communications Service License, i.e. that Broadband InfraCo is limited to a business of so-called infrastructure provisioning, where other operators are then gain access to that infrastructure and provide services on top of that network. This was a position that was put forward by a number of other operators to the public hearings of ICASA. Throughout our negotiation process with ICASA, we spent a significant amount of time on this issue, put forward our legal understanding of the Electronic Communications Act. With all fairness to all parties, Chair, the Electronic Communications Act is a difficult piece of legislation to understand. The situation is currently as follows, Chair, that ICASA are seeking legal opinion on the correct interpretation of the Act, and this will guide their recommendation to the Council in terms of the finalization of this matter. Chair, I believe all the questions have been answered.
No, Mr. Rasul asked about the impact of the delay.
The impact of the delay is clear, Chairperson, that under the current framework, without Broadband InfraCo having a license, that Neotel has exclusive use of that infrastructure. We are not, in terms of the law, able to make that infrastructure available to other parties. And hence the delay in our licensing perpetuates that situation as we move forward. Only after our license will it be a legal requirement for us to provide open access. Now, in terms of special insight to intellectual property and inside track on future network development and so on, I'm not overly concerned about the implications of that. Because strictly speaking, the making available of this infrastructure to other parties in the future, I do not believe they will be prejudiced in terms of gaining access to broadband InfraCo points of presence going forward.
Mr. Chairperson, I'm not understanding this thing about the license clearly, because I was trying to read this. I was reading the Electronic Communications Act, which I agree is a little difficult to understand. I was trying to differentiate, before I came to this meeting, what is the difference between ECNS and ECS, so that I can understand why it is so. I was trying to understand for myself, before I came to this meeting, what was the objection of the other participating people who came in the public participation process to you getting licensed automatically, what is called a deemed license as compared to a non-deemed license where you have to apply. Because I wanted to see what the exact problem is. My understanding is that they didn't want to set a precedent to give a deemed license in terms of the Electronic Communications Act, because it will be seen that government is giving unfair advantage to a parastatal, which it is, or state-owned enterprises as compared to a public-owned enterprises, in view of the fact that they are public-owned enterprises. But when I looked at the submissions and who came with the submissions, it was mostly people who had objections to the ECS licenses, because they were worried that if you got into the ECS market, you'd be a competitor to them. But for the ECNS license, there was not much objections to your application. Then we asked the question again to see whether the application is a joint application or separate applications, and can the applications be separated, and can ICASA give an ECNS application immediately such that you can go ahead with that while we debate the ECS license to come up later. You must understand, this is my sixth day on the board and I've done all of this work. Now, what else we were hoping in a response is that you would educate us to what can help to expedite the license, because to me I still do not understand why an ECNS license cannot be given immediately within in terms of the Act, because there is no competition to that. The second thing, you are an infrastructure company which is going to give an open source to all other people to connect onto, and it is an infrastructure that the country requires for others to compete, to for other platforms to come in. Is there any other competitors in the ECNS license that needs to be taken into consideration that are we competing with? Because I didn't see any in the submission. I had limited information. The second part of it is that if that is the situation, what needs to be done from the ICASA side? Because now I look at it that ICASA now says they are seeking legal opinion about the interpretation of the Act. Now that can take months to go on end before they can conclude this. And when you talk about legal opinion, it comes to a situation where if you put 10 lawyers in a room, they will give you 10 different interpretations, and it can take 10 months, you know, to come to a conclusion. So maybe guide us in a direction to say what needs to happen in this. Don't forget we are also legislators in this process, because we need to see how this can be streamlined. Because I believe that my personal view was that when you made a joint application for ECNS and ECS license together, it became muddled a little bit, because you would have been competing with competitors as in terms of separate applications. But maybe as a follow-up to that, I need to understand this thing carefully.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Chairperson, you see, it's complicating it, and we're not moving forward because we're going to leave this meeting, and there's no clarity. And Dr. Pillay is correct. We may sit here in 6 months' time, and it will still be a legal opinion awaiting. So I think Dr. Pillay is correct that why can't we assist or find out why the ECNS license cannot be provided to you? And then we need to probably, as a portfolio committee, talk to other portfolio committees, because the ICASA is not with us, to find where the problem is. But as it stands now, there's no guarantee, there's no certainty way forward. And in 6 months' time, we might then sit here again exactly the same as the 1st of September 2009.
It's not what us, but nothing precludes us from inviting them if we are still not happy with the license issues. But let us give you a chance. I was teasing you on the investment issue. If you are happy, I will rest my case. But I don't know if I got clarity. Maybe I was not listening carefully. But I'm prepared to let it go. Can you respond to Dr. Pillay and Dr. Gorin's off issues on the licensing problems?
Just before you go, on the investment side, I understood from the reply that you invested in money market. You didn't go on forward buying or exchange stock market. It was surely purely market, money market investment. And that's fine.
We took the safest option because that money we need for our infrastructure rollout, and we want it to be readily available.
Chair, just to unpack the issue of our application for both licenses, the Broadband Infraco Act is clear in terms of us provide in both ECNS and ECS. However, that does not entitle us to those licenses because ICASA still has to apply its mind. The policy direction from the Minister of Communications also made it clear that that ICASA issued an invitation to apply for us for both licenses, which we complied with. Our legal interpretation of the Act is a clear one. Well, it's clear from our legal perspective that the ECNS is a minimum requirement for infrastructure ownership, build, own and operate, whereas the ECS license requirement is to be able to actually transmit a telecommunication service over that infrastructure. This is our legal interpretation. For that reason, it's clear why we applied for both, and it was necessary to do so together so that we could go to market and offer a telecommunication service. Clearly, the water has been muddied with people objecting, and what we see, a possible initiative to keep us out of certain markets. Now, going forward, Chair, I can't give this portfolio committee a clear indication of the way forward. We understand that there are certain processes to be followed, and for those processes to be followed, legal opinion is required. I'm not sure whether our chairperson wants to add any further comments to that.
Madam Chair, I think Dave is getting around the issue a little bit, and I'm going to be very direct, I will hand over to Jackie as well from DPE to actually, you know, come directly. We have gone and applied for both the ECNS and ECS on the basis of, number one, lengthy deliberations that occurred prior to our incorporation. That incorporation, our Incorporation Act, clearly stipulates that we need the two licenses. And that was after due deliberation between, you know, State Attorney, ICASA was there, Department of Communication was there, and other parties were there as well, including the operators who at that time did forward their objection, you know, to those deliberations. And might I say that those deliberations took a period of 18 months to conclude before our incorporation. So it is on the basis of that we went forward and applied for both licenses. Not only that, when the minister, the then minister, the later minister, Azi Masepe Kasaburu, put forward her policy directive, after further due deliberation, you can see that the process took from February of 2008 to the beginning of 2009. When she eventually came up with the policy directive, I would like to believe that she had applied her mind with her department, and they put forward a requirement that we get both licenses. Now, in the hearings, obviously, the same parties that had objected to us getting incorporated and also to us getting the ECNS and ECS licenses at incorporation point were the same parties that came to our public hearings for our licensing. And naturally, they would put forward the same objections that they had put forward some 12, 14 months ago. And they did that. And we had reached a point with ICASA whereby ICASA had put forward, or the committee at ICASA was about to put forward a recommendation to their council for, you know, due licensing of Infraco, getting both licenses. And that was as far back as about July. Until a point, and I'm going to be very careful that I don't overstep my boundary here, until a point where the whole process was halted because there was a directive from GOC that said there was unhappiness with us getting the ECS license. You know, the basis of that, obviously not being close to the DOC, we don't know, we don't understand. It is then at that point that this thing started going backwards and forwards and go backwards and forwards, and to the point where we were pained as Infraco to explain to our minister and our deputy minister our rationale for saying that we require both licenses based on our legal opinion. And at that point, it became very necessary that the two ministers, DOC and DPE, get into a room again where we were given the opportunity to explain very clearly. And the parting shot from those meetings was that, I mean, from that last meeting was that the two departments jointly should go out, should set out to get a joint legal opinion that would then inform the way forward so that the eventual license that Infraco gets is not challengeable in a court of law. Unfortunately, what has happened here is the DPE has gone and sought their own legal opinion, and we have sought our own legal opinion, and I understand, and I'm not privy to this, that the DOC has gone out and gotten their own legal opinion, and the reason where we are is that there is a conflict in the two legal opinions, which is something that I expected, and therein lies the stalemate, and we're not too sure how, you know, this will be moved forward. I feel that the call to ICASA to ask them where they are with their process, because firstly I wanted to understand, you know, how they are treating this stalemate, and I was told categorically that they have now referred the matter to their legal department, which legal department is now then going to come up with a recommendation to council for a licensing of Infraco. Now, I know that my CEO is very careful, you know, he doesn't want to sort of like, you know, but I'm giving you the picture as it is, and, you know, without giving my own opinion as to what I think of this process, but that's exactly where we are right now.
I see the lady from the, what's her name? Jackie. Okay, Jackie wants to say something, but I want us now, as members of the portfolio committee, to decide now what we're going to do, because this problem is serious. I'll give you a chance, then we will interrogate it in terms of the way forward as this committee, right here and now.
The main issue that actually made ICASA to now review it is because the Department of Communication issued a letter to the department withdrawing the policy directive that was given. So they're also in a challenge as to how do you proceed when you've been given a letter indicating that they're withdrawing the policy directive. So that's where the challenge is. As a department, we thought that in order to resolve this, we should also get our own legal opinion. We have gotten legal opinion on this matter, and we have been trying to communicate with DOC so that we can have a joint meeting to discuss as to what the outcome was of the legal opinion. They haven't since come back to us. We also did engage ICASA yesterday to find out as to what the process is and whether they're going to go ahead. Just to add to answer your question, we did propose to say, in as much as that these issues, in terms of ECNS, they can proceed and actually give it to us while they still try to resolve this. But that is ICASA, it's an independent body that has to actually decide as to how they actually decide to issue the license. So these are the challenges that we have with ICASA and with DOC. So.
Members, I'm putting this to you now in terms of the way forward. Dr. Koronov, Mr. Van Der, Van Dijk, Dr. Van Dijk.
Mr. Chairperson, I have a difficulty because I've been trying to follow this, and maybe they will correct me if my interpretation is wrong. you have an Electronics Communication Act in terms of which the minister has to give guidelines into a policy direction in which licensing should be taking place. Now that act is passed, the minister is supposed to give the guidelines in this, and there was considerable delay, let me say, before the minister gave the guidelines for whatever reasons that is there. In the meantime, you have another act being passed. And prior to this taking place, there's public hearings and public participations in which people who have got rival ECS licenses have given an opportunity to make their submissions, and that was taken into consideration when that act was passed. Now, then you pass a second act, which says this is the Broadband Infraco Act. Now, prior to passing that act, you call for participation, and people add an opportunity to object, and an act gets passed. So it means we have overruled certain amount of objections as legislators. And my understanding is that we make the law, so the legislators overruled, after applying our mind, certain applications. If some people had an objection to that, they should go to the Constitutional Court and say how it is unconstitutional, and then only the Constitutional Court can ask us to withdraw this. Now you make an application to ICASA because the minister is delayed in putting out the policy for licensing. People then come and object to the policy in licensing. Correct me if I'm in the issuing of the license. Well, what happens is that once you apply for a license, you have to publicize it, and then they say in the public hearings why they are objecting. Now, I am saying that why they are objecting was already heard at the time when the Infraco Act has been passed. Now, you're giving them a second bite of it, and now you're delaying a process because you're hearing the same objection again, which these legislators have agreed. And I fail to understand how that is being entertained, because it's an undermining of what is happening from the legislation. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, this process to me, what is I'm asking, are we in government? Mm-hmm. You know, I've asked this question many times. Is there a government that is in control? Because you're opening a process out, so-called this democracy, and it becomes too democratic that it becomes undemocratic now. And so to me this thing is very clear. These people, I could not understand, in the public participation process, an answer should be very simple. You have been asked and answered, as the legal opinion would have been. You put these objections before. These objections have been overruled. That is why the Infraco Act has been passed. In terms of this, your objections then become void. But instead of taking that opinion and that route and going, there has been now, as I said to you, instead of a political process taking, a bureaucratic process took place here, and a political process didn't intervene at that time to say, this is a government intervention, let's look at it. You've got now three circulating opinions. And these opinions, I managed to get two, I didn't read the third one. And as I said, if you go to different lawyers, you get different interpretations. And there is certain muddying of the waters in the application becoming ECNS and ECS, because there's a lot of objection to the ECS because they feel that you're going to compete with them. Then my condition was, why don't you just give an ECNS license and then allow them to continue? And you can put conditions of it subject to it, and there is provisions in the Electronic Communication Act to say you can give what is called provisional licensing subject to conditions. And I didn't understand why this is not going forward, and we make a huge investment as a country, and we're sitting with this investment just gathering dust because of certain private enterprises who have got a vested interest. And their vested interest has got nothing to do with taking our country forward. And this is what my worry is about this whole thing. And we need to take an intervention.
You know, Dr. Pillay, thank you very much for outlining the process and the problems. I thought you would end up by proposing a way forward.
My way forward, I didn't want to preempt you, Chairperson, because I thought you would summarize and come. My way forward is, I believe you, as the Chairperson of the committee, should be calling the two ministers to account, and if to extent we should call ICASA to a closed room meeting to say, what is going on in this process? How do we expedite it? and really find a solution to this process. And in that process, while doing this, is have legal people there to guide us such that we're not going to be challenged in this. Because what happens in law, once you open the can of worms and the worms start running out, you've given opportunity for people to go fishing. And that can delay you in court for another. What you don't want to happen is this process, you get a license and somebody challenges that license, and then you could be sitting in court for the next 4 years.
Yes, I note your recommendation. I'm stopping now, Dr. Sunday, before Dr. Koronov, because he had said very little in this meeting today.
Yes.
You speak first and then Dr. Koronov.
Jefferson, yes, I'm still waiting for the second round of questions, but if you first want to get the way forward, I'll wait for the second round of questions.
Okay, fine. Dr. Koronov?
I can only go on what the chairperson and the CEO puts in the annual report. And in the annual report, the process is spelled out clearly, how you see it. The ministerial directives stated that Afrikaansa should do certain things. Then there was the invitation to apply. You even mentioned the deadlines, the time frames. And all of a sudden, it derailed. And I think you mentioned there was a withdrawal of ministerial policy directives. But I think that the correct way to go is for this committee to consider to call the two relevant ministers of DOC and DPE to this committee, probably also with ICASA, and let us sort out this problem. This thing is derailing everything, and I don't think we can allow it to listen to this and then walk away and say, no, it's not our problem.
You've just seconded what Dr. Pillay says, so we will move with that if there is no objection.
Thanks, Chair. I mean, this issue reminds me a bit of the kind of cell phone issue and the interconnection rate and how ICASA took 5 years and they still haven't dealt with it. And clearly there's a problem at ICASA in terms of expediting these kinds of matters. The problem is, though, is that ICASA is, I think, by law, an independent regulatory body. So the question is that our hands are kind of tied to a certain extent as to how we can intervene with ICASA to get them to deal with these issues. I think we can possibly question them as to why it's taken so long, but I don't think that we can put pressure on them to license at this stage, because that can then be challenged in a court of law, as far as I understand, if we have been seen to be interfering as a government. So, I mean, I think that needs to be clarified as to what our powers are in terms of trying to get this process moving on. But I agree in terms of we definitely need the two departments and the two ministers to sit down and agree on what the legal opinion is, so that hopefully that can be taken to a court. So I think we just need to tread quite carefully in this kind of murky terrain to see that it's not legally challenged afterwards.
No, we will call the two ministers and we will invite the ICASA as well, because I think they are stalling the process.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Nan, before I take you, is it on this issue?
Yes.
Okay, I thought we were closing it, but I allow you to.
Well, thanks, Chairperson. It's actually a comment, Chairperson. I dare say that the situation in which we find ourselves in is rather embarrassing.
Mm.
It's rather embarrassing. As Dr. Pillay correctly says, your private business has no intention whatsoever to take this country forward. You see, Chairperson, I hate to sound like a conspiracy theorist. In all of these things, there is always an underhand. Remember, there is money involved, there are profit margins involved. How I wish we could call them, I mean, the two ministers as soon as possible. It's just not understandable why a policy directive would all of a sudden be withdrawn. I mean, the minister concerned has got to explain. I just wanted to say that. And I'll come back for questions.
For now, I'm sure you can't prove the underhands and all that, but we will call all three of them. And I wanted to ask when. I think we must call them within the next 2 weeks. Is that agreed? Together with ICASA. And I want to say from the chair here, as a legislator, we can also question whether ICASA is fulfilling their mandate. We have every right to do that. And I think we should, I'm beginning to worry. With the cell phone stories and everything, I think they are more inclined to collude with private business interests than fulfilling their mandate. And they must prove us wrong. They must prove me wrong. Thank you. We conclude on this one. We take the next round of questions. I had a list of names. I will remind you how this list stood. Mrs. Bowman was the first. Mr. Nana was the second. Mrs. Ramudu was the third. Mr. Pandey, Dr. Pile, and Dr. Mangena, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Gololo, number seven.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that the whole licensing thing is what's really at the nub of today's meeting. So, and what I'm going on to now seems quite inconsequential after all of that. But right at the very beginning, the Chairperson spoke about not requiring to come back to the fiscus necessarily, and that would be self-sustainable as Infrica. I just want to ask, obviously, and maybe this is going to become clearer when we get the business plan, but are you making arrangements to go into partnerships with people? What are your financial forward planning for this, so that at the end of the day we don't sort of arrive here and find that the whole thing has crashed, and that you're coming back to draw on the fiscus? The other question I just want to ask, with the your human capital, your potential 150 people, by when do you see yourselves operating fully with a full complement? Is that going to take how much time? A year? A few months? What sort of time? Thank you.
I'm going to excuse myself for a minute. The whip will chair for that minute. You will be number third on this list. I'll be back in a minute, sir. Thank you.
Have you given me to church? No, thanks. No, sir. I thought I was in the spirit of, you know, cooperation in Parliament. I thought I was given an opportunity to share this committee. Hopefully next time. Well, Chair, certainly let me thank Infarco for up to this far a somewhat detailed presentation of the annual report. And secondly, can I also thank our researcher for some work that they have done in ensuring that at least our contribution in this meeting is also meaningful. I must also comment that your new corporate identity is quite impressive for you. But can I ask, seeing that it's green, are you in your company green as well in terms of your environmental issues? Saying that you will be laying a cable on our shores. What is the likely impact in the environment, particularly given the fact that we have depleting stock levels of our fish? Could this project impact adversely to such levels and the environment? Secondly, my question is around risk. I know on the east coast of Africa, particularly around the area of the Gulf of Eden, that area has been infested by pirates. They are hijacking every vessel that goes past the area, and some European army vessels are now patrolling that area, making the life of those pirates a bit difficult. In terms of risk, what contingency plan do we have in place in an eventuality that the pirates decide to operate on the western, on the west coast, saying that the east coast is godly, is closely patrolled. And then secondly, around risk. I'm not a scientist like Dr. Mangena, but I've heard many a times people talking about global warming and the effects of global warming to our livelihood. What does Infraco have as a safety measure in ensuring that this project is not adversely affected by your global warming story? Thanks, Professor.
Thanks, Mr. The next one will be Mr. Pandey.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to quote something from what our President said earlier this year, the opening of Parliament. And I quote his direct words, because that relates to my question. He said, to ensure delivery on our commitments, we will hold Cabinet Ministers accountable through performance instruments. We will also involve state-owned enterprises in the government planning processes and improve the monitoring and evaluation of that performance. Now, that is exactly what we are doing here today. These last words of the President, the monitoring and evaluation of their performance. Now, taking into account that Infraco is a very young company and that Parliament gave birth to this company 2 years ago, one should imagine that there should be proper management from the side of Infraco. And if you look into the annual report, it is clear that your directors attending meetings, if you look at the schedules for attending meetings, the risk committee meetings, only 50% attend all the meetings. And for your human resources, only 50% attend all the meetings. And for the investment and finance committee meetings, only 22% attend all the meetings. Now, I just want to know whether you think this is good director's practice, taking the age of your company and the very important decisions that have to be taken. My second question, Chairperson, is to the balance sheet of this public enterprise. Your balance sheet on page 34 shows that the assets and the liabilities actually balance up to the penny, which is, of course, you know, you can interpret it in two ways, very good management or cooking the books. Now, I don't accuse you of anything. But according to the Public Finance Management Act, you should actually do your accounting on the accrual basis of accounting. And it seems that if you are still on the cash basis of accounting, if you can just elaborate a little bit on that. Because to balance on the penny, you know, it's very easy for the cash basis of accounting, because you can just roll over some of the accounts and payments that you have to do to the 2009-2010 financial year. And we are not sure whether you are still on which basis of accounting you do your books to balance so pretty well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Can I just raise a point of order? I didn't want to interrupt Dr. Van Dijk.
I was going to speak to it that we should reserve our questions that have not been presented, because we are still going to address the address on the corporate. So can we reserve those questions for that time, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. Can we also then just request that, you know, probably while they're making the corporate government presentation, then they will answer the questions during that time, so we don't eat into the question time. My question relates to the issues that were presented here today. One, you know, first thing first, there's an interesting article that was written in response to the Geoff wrote an article in the Sunday Times about public enterprise or state-owned enterprises and how they should perform. I'm not particularly worried that the state-owned enterprise should make a huge profit, because the state-owned enterprise is primary responsibility is to provide an infrastructure and a platform for the country to compete. Now, in other countries, they openly flaunt it. They give subsidies to their farmers and other things like that. We should subsidize our infrastructure so that our country can become competitive economically. So if Infraco, to me, is not really making a huge profit, I wouldn't really go worry about it that much, as long as you are bringing the cost of delivery of services and the cost of production within South Africa to a competitive edge, such that it's going to give us a competitive edge over other countries. Therefore, my question comes back is, in your projections, we really need to know, if you're making this much of capital injection, what is our return on investment? How effective, and what is going to be the decrease in cost that you are projecting from what we are charging at the present moment? What is the international benchmark? What is the South African benchmark at the moment? And where we would position ourselves going forward, and what advantage companies within South Africa would have? That's my first question. My second question is, when we do anything, we should have forward planning, and I'm sure you did this, but I just need the reassurance to know, because if we have 12% share of the submarine line, and we have 12% share of the capacity of that line, is that 12% sufficient for us going into the future based on future demand? How many years projected forward do you think it's going to be enough before we run out of capacity and things like that? That is the thing that I really need to know. The third is, when a risk analysis is taking place, you know, I got fascinated by Ross Perot and his story about Coca-Cola. Are you in the bottling business, or are you in the, what business you are? I think you know the story I'm talking about. So I'm always worried about alternative technology and your risk evaluation towards alternative technology, and if they do come in, how quickly are we going to reposition ourselves? And in the terms of your risk management, we should also recognize the fact that I understand the relationship with Neotel and why we had to go in with them, and it was forced marriage. But in the sense that, in the event that when you're going to, we don't see a situation where you're not going to get a license, but when you get your license, how easily you'll be able to have an amicable divorce without acrimony, such that you can go forward properly and go about your business. And if that situation arises, then because you have outsourced most of your maintenance and your other things now, how quickly can you build up capacity within your own organization to do this, such that you don't become reliant on others to do this? And what, you know, I am always aware of the fact that science and technology, science and maths, we don't teach very well in South Africa. Do we have sufficient people within our capacity and our ranks? And are we training enough people at the present moment to fill in those gaps if those things happen? Because you are saying you're going to move from a 55 people staff structure to 150. We need to know that you'll be able to take these people on board, and that you'll be training people. And we want to encourage parastatals to also get involved in education, if wherever possible, for you to do training and other things, because a parastatal's job or a state-owned enterprise's job is not only to make the country competitive, it is also to do training in scarce resources, such that we are building capacity where we don't have capacity in that level, and that's why we made this huge investment in you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, it's a clarity-seeking question. On slide 15, bullet point number 4,
If you can just speak to that bullet again, because I'm not sure I didn't get it correctly when you spoke to it. Slide 15 of this, the broadband is for participation. And then the second one will be a question. I think one of the values of broadband in Frasco is that of customer satisfaction. So I just want to know from your point of view that whether Neotel has kept in Frasco promise to the public of reducing the price of broadband when it sells the product to its customer. If you can.
Because we have not started yet, that the questions are too much. I'm
actually coming into show two. There's 10 questions already, Chair.
Okay.
And maybe we need to start up for example.
Please, Mr. Maniela says, okay. The court is going to need to. Then we'll take the other round.
Yes, sorry, Chairperson, but I have to to leave. I will check with someone else whether the question was answered in my absence. I really just wanted to check with the regards to the services that the Infraco is going to offer to a large-scale national project. Research projects in particular. I know it is the general idea that Infraco is going to assist with these things. Now, some of them require capacity to process and transmit large quantities of data. And the general understanding is that Infraco will be able to do that. But with these discussions that have been taking place here, I'm not too sure whether we will in fact have what is planned. Some of these projects, such as the SKA, for example, are depend on their success or the success of our bid on assurance we can give that we have got the capacity to transmit this much data. Are you confident? Are you comfortable as you sit there that in fact Infraco will be able to do that? And these are projects that are worth a minimum of 165 billion rand initially, and every year something like 5.5 billion. And so you really ought to be sure that you will in fact be able to satisfy this requirement. Secondly, will they will it have a dedicated guaranteed capacity for this project that we are talking about? They guaranteed that they will always be have access and capacity to use this facility.
Yeah. Chair, can I think we can answer this question before Dr. Mangana goes. I just want to assure the committee that when it comes to the DST, Department of Science and Technology project, in particular the SKA, I want to put on the table that bid that went in, Infraco at that time was very closely with Dr. Benny Fanaroff and his team to actually scope that project and what went into the bid, and in particular on the side of capacity. So we're very familiar with what is in that bid, and we were also at the time when we're pushing for incorporation of Infraco, one of the fundamental requirements was that Infraco has to be there to support this bid, this SK bid. So we're quite confident that the capacity in everything that we do is sufficient and adequate to support that project in particular. And we're quite confident that over and above the project, we have factored in other Department of Science and Technology projects that require capacity. And we're quite confident that that capacity has been factored into our plans.
We take the next question. It was from FIB, I think. Oh, you wanted to answer this?
Madam Chair, I really would like to request that we take them from the top. Otherwise, we'll start not being able to address some of these. I will call out the questions and call out the person that's going to be responsible for answering them. The first one that I have here is the financing plan, Infraco's financing plan, in the light of the statement that I made earlier on, that we want to be self-sufficiently as quickly in the day as possible. Dave is going to answer the question, but perhaps before he goes into answering the question, you will see when you eventually get our business plan, that in there is covered our projection of our financing plan. And it also covers our requirements from the fiscal for the short term in terms of the types of injections that we're expecting from the fiscal. But let me let Dave answer that question.
Chair, the corporate plan will show that we have the funding cycle. In terms of the MTF funding cycle, we will receive funding from government for a total of 3 years, with next year being the final contribution from government. Now, we also need to recall, Chair, that government is a direct shareholder of 74%, represented by the minister, and the other 26% comes from Industrial Development Corporation. So, together, those two equity contributions, from our current assessments, will see us through the funding shortfall, together with the debt, the senior debt package that we are in the process of finalizing with the Development Bank of South Africa. So we have the equity portion, together with the 650 million rand senior debt package with DBSA, and if we superimpose on top of all of those funding requirements the inclusion of the funding requirements for the undersea cable, for WACS, we only require an additional 294 million rand of debt to conclude our funding shortfall for the period where we are not cash positive, Chairperson. This takes us to for another 2 years into the future. And we have a number of interested parties who have shown a direct interest for us to conclude the debt funding package, so we're comfortable that there will be no additional equity funding required from government. Chair, on the issue of the human capital, the recruitment of the 150 people and by when, I think this committee will hear from a number of SOEs that there are indeed a shortage of available skills in certain technical and project management areas. And we are also experiencing constraints in terms of the recruitment of those people. But we are making headway, Chairperson, and we focus very strongly on recruitment. Now, if I can tie that back to the question that was asked around training, we've also reported that we've are undergoing training in various areas of our business, from finance to project management, to the safety, health, environmental issues that have been raised. We're exposing our people to training in all of these areas. And Chair, in the specific areas of technical skills and project management skills, we are in the process of identifying pipeline candidates for training in those areas. This question is also very closely linked to another question that was asked: how long is it going to take us to ramp up to be able to serve customer needs after we license? Now, the Neotel contract is very clear, and we've made provision for that for the 12-month period after we license, that Neotel will act as the customer front end for Broadband InfraCo to give us the opportunity to ramp up the necessary skills, the necessary additional infrastructure and customer facing organization for us to be able to directly interface with external customers after we license, Chair. I think I've answered three questions in one there.
I don't know if there are any comments on that, on those answers, Chair, before I move on to the other questions that have been asked. All right. The next question was about green environmental issues with regard to woods and the landing site.
So in terms of, I've mentioned that Broadband InfraCo fully subscribes to all these necessary check, self, safety, health, environment, and quality legislations, and we're implementing processes to comply with all of those. And certainly, in the case of the implementation of the West Coast Cable, all the necessary environmental impact assessments, the necessary permits to land anything on the beach, etc., these are all integral parts of the project, Chair. The question was asked around the risk mitigation strategies for if the pirates move to the East Coast. Obviously a difficult one to answer, but we will be calling on the newly equipped South African Navy to assist us on that. And certainly on the question raised around global warming and the possible problems that could be caused by that, we don't foresee any such risk factors at this time.
The next question was around direct attendance. We acknowledge and we admit that the attendance in the last financial year may not have been where we wanted it to be. And what we have done as a board is that we put in place a board evaluation measure by our internal auditors, PricewaterhouseCoopers. And we've done the first evaluation. The purpose of the evaluation really is to firstly give members of the board an opportunity for them to assess their participation first and foremost, but also to give the internal auditor an opportunity to do an independent evaluation of the performance of the board, which report then gets presented not only to ourselves as the board, but it also gets presented to the shareholders with a view to saying that if indeed the performance is not where it should be, and perhaps brought about by lack of attendance, then the shareholder together with the board will take the necessary action. We have finalized the first report of its nature this financial year, and it is the manner in which we're going to manage the board going forward. The next question was around balance sheet issues, the accrual versus the cash approach to preparing of the balance sheet, and I'll ask Ren to answer the question.
Madam Chairperson, to answer Dr. Van Wyk's question regarding the basis of accounting, yes, we certainly do use the accrual basis of accounting, not the cash basis of accounting, and it can be evidenced in, if you refer to page 47, note 11, which is the trade and other payables, you'll see various accruals that we've made for supplies which we, obviously, services have been provided, but we couldn't pay out subsequent or as at year end, so we have provided to be paid out in the subsequent year end.
And the next question was around InfraCo and the requirements that we clearly demonstrate the return on the investment to economic development if that by clearly demonstrating what the reduction in pricing is going to look like going into the future. I ask you to comment on that.
Yeah, as part of our license application, we've had to show to ICASA prior to the conclusion of the licensing process what our indicative pricing would be. And we've demonstrated to ICASA that compared to current market benchmarks for equivalent capacity services that are provided, for example, between Johannesburg and Cape Town, that we will be able to introduce discounts from that level of up to 50%. We believe this will be significant in the marketplace chain, will unlock other operators. The exact quantification of the economic benefit of that, I do know that that DPE as a shareholder representative on an annual basis do commission consultants to actually quantify the economic benefits of the SOEs. So I'm sure this will be quantified in the forthcoming financial year. We also continually benchmark this pricing against what's available internationally. We have to do that because the international products and services are offered in the international market. There was a follow-up question around the 12% and whether it's sufficient for the projections going forward. Now, the chairperson did partially answer that in relation to the SKA, but our current market projections for traffic between South Africa and the UK and onward to the US and into Europe is that this cable will more than serve the South African needs, and in terms of broadband Infraco's own capacity, it will be able to serve the needs of the SKA project, Meerkat, the demonstrator plant for SKA, as well as any SANRAN international connectivity, and any external market capacity that we will be projecting going forward. The technologies and any alternative technologies going forward, we are constantly reviewing the markets for new technologies that are coming out, and certainly this is an ongoing analysis in terms of the business continuity processes that we implement to do environmental scans around what's the upcoming technology.
How many questions are you left? You have to pick up the
The one was around the issue of the ease of divorce from Neotel, how quickly we can build up our own capacity, not to rely on Neotel, and our plan in terms of skills and development.
Yeah, I did answer that question. It will take us 12 months in the post-licensing period to scale up for our own customer operations.
And the last question, Chair, was around Neotel. Currently, Neotel is our only customer, and we're selling to Neotel because of where we find ourselves in terms of the licensing situation. And the question was, is Neotel passing these benefits in terms of the lower cost of bandwidth to the market at large?
Jay, unfortunately, in terms of our commercial contract with Neotel, we have no legal basis to force them to pass on our transfer pricing mechanism. And again, this highlights one of the constraints of the current framework where we are not licensed. So, unfortunately, we cannot give the committee the assurance that Neotel is passing on the transfer pricing benefits from us to the end user.
Our review of some of their pricing in the marketplace has not given us comfort in the sense that we've seen their pricing to be somewhat much higher than perhaps we would have expected it to be, given the fact that they're getting the bandwidth at much lower prices than they would if we're not there. But unfortunately, as David said, you know, we don't have any control, any methodology of getting them to toe the line in terms of providing that lower pricing to the marketplace.
But if you get a ECS license, you would then be able to create competition. This is what we want to know, because otherwise it defeats the purpose of making that much of.
Is
there
an
ECS?
Yes.
So we need both licenses to effectively provide competition.
I've got the last list, but we need to be very brief because we must proceed to the financials at least. Mr. Hololo Fandik, Mr. Gage.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Most of my questions are on the corporate governance, but I heard that they are going to present a bit earlier. So let me just ask two quick questions on BEE, Broadband Infraco has adopted and implemented the necessary commercial processes to ensure that the company complies with the broad-based black economic empowerment requirements for the procurement of goods and services for the organization. 69.3 million rand for the financial year ending March 2009 was spent on BEE, constituting 70% of the total procurement spent for the year, which is very, very good, I must say. But can you tell us as to which companies actually benefited? I wonder if you could provide the committee with the breakdown of those companies. I think it would be appropriate, because on the annual report there is nothing that is mentioning on that one. And secondly, Chairperson, on the with the current global economic meltdown reaping havoc in many companies around the world, I wonder how is a broadband infraco affected by this. I wonder if we could be also provided, that is, in terms of the budget, how are you affected with this economic meltdown? Let me pause there for now, Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Pandey.
Chairperson, thank you. If we just go to page 35, the income statement shows a profit for the year. Now, for a growing company, you know, normally it takes about 5 years to get from the knees and to stand up. You already showed a profit here. You did not say that you spent
too little. You look ahead of the presentation. Okay, just ask your question and they'll pack it, because it might become answered in their presentation.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to know, Chairperson, it is not a little bit too fast to show profits. Is it not that one can assume that you spend too little, too slowly on your expansion and on your growth, because you're a company only 2 years old, and one should, you know, one should imagine that you are should be actually in the red because of investment in your investment capital investment program. Thank you.
In fact, you asked the question prematurely, Mr. Jake.
Thank you, Chair. This one concerns our international relations. If your cable is laid on the seabed, now is it laid in international waters, or is it laid in the territorial waters of the 15 countries, or does it in any way infringe on the territorial waters of the other countries that are not involved in this project? Because as you can understand, it can provide us with problems later on in terms of firstly, comrade here mentioned that some countries that we are in fact working with are also in a state of conflict, first of all, like Cote d'Ivoire, and secondly, also that if we do go into other countries' territorial waters, there may be problems. Thank you.
Thanks. Dr. Kurma?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be to the point. First, your board of directors. Do you have a code of conduct for your board of directors, and have they all signed your code of conduct? Secondly, have they made declaration of interest so that you can make sure there's no conflict of interest? I don't see it here. On page 54, there is the directors' remuneration. My question is that the total remuneration of your directors? Does it include bonuses? Do you have performance payments? Normally we need the total remuneration package of your directors, non-executive and executive. So my question is around whether you're going to publish it and whether this is all inclusive. My second question in page 21, your capital program. That's why this committee needs your business plan. To measure this. Right at the bottom, your capital program. You didn't achieve your target of the percentage of projects put into commercial operation against the approval of approved plan. One of the reasons you say there, because of difficulties in obtaining site access for construction purposes. Was this a once-off in Upington and Namibia, or do you think this is going to be a continuous problem? If it's continuous, what are you going to do? Because it affects your target. You only met 83% of your target. Just below that, well, it's very worrying. The project cost variance against the approved budget. Your target was 5%, but your variance was 37%. And right at the bottom you say, these projects did not proceed because they were not initiated by the broadband infraco customer. That's Newtel. That's a huge setback for your capital program. So can you please unpack why did this happen? What were the reasons for that? My last question, of all your committees, I see your tender procurement committee only met once in the year, and human resources only met once in the year. Are you satisfied with the two subcommittees only meeting once a year?
I will ask you to follow up. Okay.
I just want to throw into the questions also regarding the board. I noticed that of the 12 members, there are three women. I don't know, that constitutes 25%. We could have some explanation about that. We don't have adequate women, or why are we only 25?
Mr. Nana.
I was reluctant, Chair, but please allow me. Chairperson, can I contextualize my question about pirates? I see that leadership from Infraco kind of glossed it over, but to me it remains a concern. The cable which is currently being laid on the East Coast, at some point the operators foresaw a delay, particularly because of the pirates, and the kind of response you get that we will call our newly refurbished army to deal with that, to me doesn't really hold water. I'm just urging, they may not necessarily respond to this, but I'm just urging them to look beyond that. You may never know what happens in the next 18 months, and to delay such a project by one day could cost a lot of money. I'm just requesting them to have a contingency plan in case anything happens. You may never know.
Can you answer the questions and touch on whatever critical things you still need to put before us so that we move towards closing the meeting
and making the way forward?
Bomad, you ask your follow-up question.
Yeah.
Okay. So in terms of the company under the BEE list, you will make that available together with the other information that we've committed to do today. The economic meltdown, see, I think it's fair to say we haven't been so severely impacted. But to the extent that we purchased equipment from Europe, we have seen that the cost of that equipment has come down, and obviously the rand dollar and the rand euro exchange rate have the appreciation of the rand against those currencies has benefited us since that point. On the issue of the income statement profit, I think we have. Now, I think when assessing that on the bottom line, that profit is shown, a lot of that is related with financial income, not operations income. On the operating profit line, you'll see that we are still making a loss and do expect to continue to make a loss.
for the remaining of our planning period of 2 years of the operating cost line, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortization. The international cable chair is on the primary route laid in international waters, i.e. outside of the 200 kilometer territorial water zone. However, where the cable has to land, it obviously has to transverse those territorial waters, and the necessary permits to do that have to be acquired by the consortium, and invariably they are done under the auspices of a licensed operator in that territory. So, for example, to land in the territorial waters of South Africa, that permit would be acquired under the license, for example, of Telkom.
You will also note, Chair, that in most of the countries where this cable is going to land, one of the operators, licensed operators in that country, is a member of the consortium, and we therefore charge them with the responsibility of going back to that particular territory to negotiate all of these agreements for bringing in the cable and landing it in that particular country. The next one is mine. It's about the code of conduct and declaration of interest. Yes, we do have a code of conduct for the board, which has been signed off in our shareholder compact with the shareholder, and we have a declaration of interest register, which is updated at every board meeting, and it's available for scrutiny if there is so required for this committee.
Chair, the numbers that are reported in the annual report are fully inclusive of all remuneration for executive, non-executive directors. On the non-executive directors' side, there was a question around performance or incentive payments. There are none. Maybe I can move on to the capital program questions. Chair, I mean, in all honesty, we have identified shortcomings in our capital program as one of our weak areas that we want to focus on and develop. It does relate back to the issue of skills that we've alluded to earlier, and the availability of project management skills in this market is very tough. Now, the issues for the delays are related to Neotel not initiating a project. Obviously, as a company, given that we want to be sustainable, we wouldn't go out and invest in infrastructure where you do not have a customer commitment for payment. So, I mean, that really does explain the 37% variance against budget. So, where the 5% target was envisaged to mean that if you have an approval for a project of 100 million, you actually complete the project either between 95 million or 105 million. Now, the 37% reflects the projects that were not committed to, and in fact, the 37% is a negative variance, which means it was resulted in an actual capital saving to the company. So it's not a negative, it's not a detrimental to the company.
In terms of meetings, standard procurement committee meeting and the HR meeting, having won the last financial year,
Okay, thank you. Speaking to the mic.
Chairman, thanks for the opportunity to answer. The reason that we've had only one tender and procurement and one HR committee meeting was that we have also a delegation of authority that's been signed, and the decisions that were required were basically didn't require the committee to meet. It fell within the subcommittee delegation of authority. So the amounts required from a, let's call it from a tender perspective, did not exceed 35 million. So in that case, there wasn't a need for the tender committee to meet, but where it did require to meet was where it was over 35 million. And same with the HR committee. Whatever decisions were required to be taken fell within the either the EXCO's delegation of authority, and hence the need for only one meeting for that financial year.
There's an audit
and risk committee, yes. And they've met on a number of occasions, given the startup nature of the company. So I think the the circumstances required them to meet more on an ongoing basis as well. Thank you.
Chair, without objection.
Just to say, we left with 5 minutes. In this 5 minutes, you must conclude your presentation. Give us a few minutes to close up. So I'll give you 5 minutes, and then we'll take the 5 minutes. So we will run over for, we'll stop at 25 to 1.
In terms of board members, Chair, the issue about why three ladies amongst so many men. This inaugural board, Chair, was really imposed upon us by, not imposed, I shouldn't use that terminology. it was chosen by the shareholder, and this is the inaugural board. And I might just add that the shareholder is conscious of the fact that there's more women needed on this board, and there are plans in place to bring in more ladies.
The board members that are frequently absent from meetings are the men, because if they eject, they must be replaced by women. Because in any board, when you don't attend three consecutive meetings, you're actually out. And if it's men that are not attending, they are creating a space for women.
Unfortunately, in this case, it's a combination of both.
Chair, I'm just scanning the slides to see whether there's any matters that haven't been addressed. I think all the questions around the shareholder compact have been asked, so we can move on past that. Just to highlight on the overall shareholder compact, the audited result of that was that we've achieved 90.4% of the 100% of the compact. On the financial statements, Chair, is there any one area you wish us to focus on?
No, I
wanted
to say it's still early days to vote for that 94%.
Still
early days to vote. Dr. Just one question. I think to have a saving on a capital program is not acceptable. Really. On a capital program, you spend all the money. And I don't know by a project cost of a variance of 37%, unless I understand it wrongly. But you need to spend 100% on your capital program.
Are there reasons for that?
Yes. Chair, I did outline that we, at the same time as us making a commitment to infrastructure and skills development and affordability, the company has to be sustainable. The company cannot commit to capital expenditure to benefit Neotel without a contract in place for payment for that infrastructure. That's simply not on. So for every infrastructure investment that we make, we have a commitment from the customer. That's what they want. This is how much they'll pay. And unfortunately, Neotel had to make projections on contracts that they would win in the marketplace. And they handed that back to us so that we could plan. And they did not win those contracts. We couldn't expand the network to support them. So I have acknowledged that we are beefing up our capital program environment, but we will not invest simply for the sake of budget.
You proceed
as you think
you wish to
go through our system. Chair, I think, I'm undermining our CFO here, Chair, but I do want to draw your attention to the clear audit. A clear, unqualified audit, as well as the fact that the auditors have signed off on the fact that there were no PFMA non-compliances. I think we are proud of that, given the startup nature of the company.
Chair, our today was just to report back to you in terms of, what we think we have achieved, and just to give you a comfort and a feel that, we are on the right track. We have due governance in our company, and we're monitoring everything. And I will leave you with one thought. The only thing that is a bee on our bonnet right now that keeps us awake at night is the license. We could otherwise have moved forward quite aggressively had it not been for a holdback on the license.
Yes, members, are there any other comments, questions you'd like, even if we receive them, and have invited? Nothing coming from member? Okay. In the sense, if there is nothing, I would like to just
conclude by saying there are a number of document information that are sending from Infraco. We have a list. We will be sending a letter to remind you of all those things by tomorrow and later. We will meet you in 2 weeks' time when we meet the Minister of DCE, Communications, and ICASA, and maybe we would still, if there are things that we think we should have pissed out to them, we would just discuss them on it. I'm definitely not happy with the new test story. I don't know if I'm the only one in the committee. So we might open this new test possibility again in the new one. So, members, is there any other thing that I'm leaving when I am concluding here that we should put down for when we meet in 2 weeks' time? Chairperson of Board, I've noticed your frown and your hand.
Sorry, you made a statement, Chair, and I wasn't quite clear. You said you were not happy with this new tell story, and I'm trying to understand what the story is.
There was a question posed about how long your contract with new tell will be in place, and then you said 12 months after obtaining the license. Okay. But you are not I'm personally not very sure that it's going to happen in 12 months. Maybe I'm just being problematic. Because you don't even know when are you going to get the license.
So the contract is structured in that manner. But let me say that although there might be an anxiety around Neotel, Neotel is a very important anchor customer for us. So after we licensed, we do want to continue to be able to serve Neotel as a proper customer going forward. The only issue around the contract is that we needed time to build the capacity internal to our organization to serve customers. And that is what the 12-month period is for. It doesn't stop us serving Neotel as a customer going forward. But it enables us time to build the organizational capability to serve customers external to Neotel.
And might I add, Chair, that this does not mean that while we have this 12-month period running with Neotel, we cannot start already serving other customers outside of Neotel. I just want to give you that assurance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Check it.
Into your mic, please.
This is the department will be providing the business plan, which will address most of the issues, especially around licensing, to see even the revenue going forward as to how we actually try to mitigate that. And as well, just wanted to make sure to the committee that the reason sometimes it takes long for us to evaluate is because the department is satisfied that actually the business is, like, Infraco itself, they will be able to provide those DST projects in terms of the capacity and also to make sure that it's financially sustainable. So we need to interrogate that and be satisfied that government objectives will still be met and the company still remains viable. So we'll be forwarding that information to you.
I assume that you will be attending also in the next 2 weeks when we meet here.
Yes, I will attend.
Okay, thanks. This brings us to the end of the meeting, and I thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned. Before we leave, PNG, this
register that you give members, what is this for? And because I don't think that you should be taking information of members and cell numbers wrong. I was holding this register to explain to me what is this all about. Thanks. Thank you.